This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
I like the program beats. Diamond D is out. I want to say pay. Show biz, there's deals to make. So let's get busy and dig in the crates.
Oh, don't stop. You keep on
digging in the crates. Let's get busy.
Keep on
digging in the crates.
Welcome, everybody, to the debut Digging in the Crates podcast. I'm your host, Phil Schneider. A little about the conceit of this show, basically. I don't know how many folks remember the old Schneider comp mixtapes I used to put together back in the 90s and early 2000s, and a little bit, like 4 or 5 years ago. But basically, what we're doing with this podcast is I'm going to create one of those, going to pick the matches, get somebody on here to talk about the matches with me, and then when we get about 20, 22 matches picked, my buddy Will put this out for people to buy if they want. We're also going to put links to matches if they're on YouTube for people to watch them and sort of thinking about so you can kind of participate. I've got Will, good old Will, as my first guest here.
Good old Will. What's good up, Will? Phil?
I'm used to just not doing the intros to these things. I'm used to just...
I can tell, man. You sound nervous. You sound like you sound like a rookie, Phil.
Well, you know, I'm used to just taking shots at whoever's doing the intro.
What an asshole.
Fine. I've never had to host one before. So basically what we did is we picked four pretty cool matches that I thought were like the idea behind digging in the crates is I try to find things that are a little under the radar, things that people haven't talked that much about. One of these matches is fairly well known, but it's pretty old. A couple of the other ones are pretty under the radar. And then we're going to kind of, you know, watch them, talk about them, why I think they're cool, why I think people get people psyched up to check them out. So, Will, you watched all four of these matches last night and today?
I did. I'm excited to talk about every single one of them.
All right, let's do this in chronological order.
Sounds good.
So let's start with the 10-man tag. So let me load up. This is sort of a new classic New Japan 10-man tag like we had a ton of in the 80s sets.
Right. And it's Riki Choshu, our man Hoshino, who we're going to talk a lot about for this match.
Hoshino.
Kuniaki Kobayashi, Shiro Koshinaka, and Kensuke Sasaki versus Animal Hamaguchi, Super Strong Machine, Goto, Saito, and Korisu. Now, Phil, you got to help me out, because I always get this Goto and Saito confused. Which one had the bleach blonde hair and which one had the brown mullet?
Goto had the bleach blonde hair.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Goto had the bleach blonde hair. Then that's not Tarzan Goto.
Right. Tatsu Toshi Goto, right?
Tatsutoshi Goto. Yeah, I like having you do the intro, so you have to try to pronounce these Japanese names.
Dude, I'm horrible at this shit. And it's not Masa Saito. It's not, you know.
No, it's Hiro Saito.
It's Hiro Saito, who is not.
Who I think is related to Masa Saito. Like maybe his son or his cousin, or maybe a fake son or cousin.
Got it.
Could be like an Arn Anderson-ish. He's not really an Anderson. Somebody will correct me obnoxiously about that. But I'm pretty sure he's a Saito. Well, he certainly looks a lot like Masa Saito and wrestles a little like him. He's not nearly, you know, the guy the rest of Masa Saito is. But so it's kind of what's great about this match, and I think, well, lots of really great things about it. But you know, this is a match where you take you can create just insane heat and a great match with some guys. You know, these are outside of Choshu. He's your really only, and Animal Hamaguchi, although Animal Hamaguchi is super old at this point. Those are your only real, great wrestlers. Everybody else in this is basically like an undercard guy.
Absolutely. Well, Super Strong Machine had kind of a hot run for a while.
I mean, they're all good. I like all these guys, but you know, but none of them were big stars. You know, Kazuki Sasaki would become one, but he's a couple years away. But basically, this is like some dudes. Put five dudes on each side of a match and have them get a bunch of heat and then get really into the crowd. I mean, this is not a type of match New Japan really does anymore, which I don't get, because this feels like a pretty easy way to fill a card. Get a bunch of guys who don't like each other, put them on each side of the thing, and then go after it, 2 out of 3. This is 2 out of 3 falls instead of elimination. I kind of like these matches as elimination matches more.
I agree.
But this was pretty fun. So what did you, who was the standout for you in this match? There were 10 guys, so everybody's not going to stand out.
Well, yeah, and there were, well, some people stood out for good reasons, and some people stood out for bad reasons, okay? Like, you can tell Kensuke Sasaki is really green here, right? Like, he is not ready for prime time. Although the crowd went nuts for this guy. I mean, he botched a judo throw that almost crippled Super Strong Machine. His first power slam, which is a Sasaki staple, like looked really bad, like Don Morocco power slam bad. But the crowd was going nuts for him. Every time he'd run in to go break up a pin, the crowd was just going nuts for Sasaki. So I think he's one of those guys where you have to chalk it up to has this charisma and connection with the crowd, even though he's not really good, right?
Yeah, and I kind of like Sasaki at this period as kind of your really awkward Rick Steiner-ish guy. That's why you got a sense that they made a good tag team. I mean, this guy who's big and who's you know, ridiculously strong and will just chuck a guy kind of awkwardly on the side of his shoulder.
Yeah, like,
I even pick a guy up and just throw him halfway across the ring. I don't know if there's really that kind of guys really like that anymore. Jeff Cobb, who works in California Indies and was like an amateur wrestler for Guam, kind of wrestles like that now, but I can't really think of a ton of other guys who have that same sort of like too strong for their own good.
Right.
I'm going to throw you in the air and you're going to land somewhere and I don't really give a shit where it is.
What about a guy like Ryback though, who's like that big muscled guy who's known to injure guys in WWE?
Yeah, Ryback maybe a little. I don't get the sense that Ryback's that strong.
Okay.
I think Ryback's like those look like gym muscles to me.
Yeah, it's very possible, you know. I mean, or liquid muscles, right?
Yeah. Like, I don't think Ryback's as strong as a guy like Cena or Big E. Big E maybe a little like that, but Big E's like more professional.
Nah, Big E's a strong dude, man. Like, you know, you see him like lifting those weights. I don't know. The guy who stood out for me, and I said that we were going to talk a lot about this guy, Kentaro Hoshino.
Yeah.
Holy God. I mean, Phil, this guy at best was like a junior heavy, like his whole career. I've never seen him in a main event ever, right? That wasn't like a multi-man main event.
Sure.
Never. I mean, this is like bottom of the card, warm up guy. Been wrestling since the 60s. Okay. And every time this guy got in, and we said this, for those who don't know, Phil and I and, our buddy Childs and, even Chris Zellner and those guys, we watched a bunch of Japanese matches over at Death Valley Driver, the message board, and we came away thinking Hoshino was like this great hidden gem. Like, where has this guy been all our lives?
And even then, I mean, I don't think he had that many matches on the New Japan 80s. They have that many matches on tape. He's a guy who has really been working dark undercard matches on most of these cards.
But the thing was, when he did make tape, he made the set. You know, he made the list. And Hoshino is a guy with just we talked about charisma. He's a guy with amazing charisma. He gets in the ring and the crowd just erupts. And he doesn't do much. He does a headlock. He countered like a German suplex position into a Fujiwara armbar. He does some punches to the head while he has a guy in a headlock. Maybe does a couple of cross bodies. Not a guy who does a lot, but
I seem to remember a sliding drop kick to the floor.
I'm going to get to that point. I'm going to get to that because that's a whole sequence of coolness there. But I'm just saying, like, he's not a guy like Gran Hamada is a guy with a bunch of cool moves and cool counters, right? Yeah. And Hoshino is just a guy who's almost like a mini Choshu and a guy who doesn't do a lot but gets by on a lot of charisma. And like every time he gets something.
You know, Gran Hamada, I know that one of the perils of match lists, a lot of times you would have they would list it as Ran Hamada and it would be Hoshino. I don't know if it was ever vice versa. But a lot of times you'd be like, ooh, Ran Hamada. And you're like, oh, Hoshino. And initially you're like, oh, that's not Ran Hamada. But later you're like, oh, cool, Hoshino.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And well, what Phil was talking about is that there's a sequence where Saito gets thrown out of the ring by his own momentum because Hoshino dodged a tackle. And he goes flying into the railing. And then he gets back up on the apron, so Hoshino drop kicks him back to the railing. And then, as he's, like, recovering, Hoshino goes and does a baseball slide, sending Saito back to the railing. It's one of the coolest sequences in the entire match.
Yeah, Saito is a total early 90s bump freak in this. Not 2015, I'm going to take a reverse circuit rod on the top of my head or get power slammed to the floor from the top rope or anything like that. But in 1990, bum freak, he was flying into those railings in a really fun way.
In a very Lucha-esque way, almost. Yeah. So who stood out for you on this, Phil?
Well, I'm a big Carrizo fan. He looks like a insurance salesman. He's like a guy who just kind of had sort of a longish career showing up in like scumbag Japanese indies. And he's just a guy who's like, come in there and unprofessionally punch somebody right in the like eye socket or potato headbutt somebody or stomp him in the chest. And he's such a scumbag. And like, the crowd just hates his guts and he'll run there and he'll grab a chair and hit somebody on the side of the head with the chair, not the way you're not supposed to chair shot somebody. And I've always enjoyed, he's the guy I always like seeing as, oh, here's a guy who's going to, for this kind of match, you kind of want a guy to be semi-unprofessional for this inter-promotional kind of 10-man tag, gang war kind of thing. And Carrizo is just great. And I remember we're talking about 80 sets here, this is a pre-Will 80 set, we were doing the Other Japan 80 set. On like the first FMW show, there's a Carrizo versus Baby Jado. Like Jado in his like first couple of matches.
That's current in New Japan Booker.
Yeah, current New Japan Booker Jado of Gato and Jado fame, the lesser of the Gato and Jado team. Not working as Jado, working as whatever his real name is. Where Carrizo like lays in like an Ian Rotten on a guy who stole his math level beating on this kid. Like, you watch it, like, oh my god, that's not the way you're supposed to kick somebody in the jaw in a wrestling match. So it's like, Carrizo's always the guy who's gonna work this kind of, not gonna do things the way you're supposed to. And for this kind of Japanese match, where it's like a bunch of guys from, my history of my New Japan 1990 history is a little sketchy, but this clearly is like an invading force of like indie dudes. This team of like Hamaguchi and Super Strong Machine and Goto and Saito and Carrizo are not like New Japan guys.
Well, actually, Carrizo and Goto, they got their chops in New Japan. Like Carrizo, like was a jobber starting in New Japan.
Yeah,
and then he left and then came back.
Yeah, so this was an invading force kind of deal, and that's one of the cool things about invading force Japanese wrestling is always have that sort of. Any moment now that these two guys are going to stop cooperating and start, trying to kill each other. That's what all made all those war New Japan things so great, or even, the UWF New Japan feud, where, am I eating my kicky in the eye? there's always some steps of I eat my kicky in the eye and swell up your eye. So yeah. I think Carrizo really brings that to this.
Well, you know what I liked about that? Because this is a perfect example. This match mainly took place in the ring, except for, a few things on the outside. But whenever they were on the outside, Carrizo was right there in the middle of the action with a chair, right? Yeah. This isn't FMW. This isn't Big Japan. This is New Japan. And he's hitting dudes over the head with a chair. And this was in the first fall. So by the time we get to the third fall, Carrizo ends up getting a taste of his own medicine as Team Choshu. I just called him Team Choshu. They all go on the outside and start attacking Carrizo with a chair on the outside, and the crowd's going crazy. So they actually played up something that happened in the first fall and the third fall. And Phil's absolutely right. Like, you don't usually hear Japanese crowds boo, right? Like, boo. And they were booing Carisu. I couldn't tell if it was because they genuinely hate the guy and they want to see him lose, or if he had that I don't want to see you in my ring heat. But, man, it added to the match. But I couldn't tell
I think they probably hate him. I mean, this isn't like a ROA, a PWG.
No, I get that. I get that. That's why I couldn't tell, because I'm not accustomed to them booing so loudly for, like, one guy, you know, yeah. And they really hated him. Like, Hamaguchi, they would kind of, like, cheer, because Animal Hamaguchi's a legend at this time. And I thought Super Strong Machine was also pretty solid. Like, he was kind of the guy who, whenever the other team would take over, he would be the guy that got tagged in to kind of bring it back to their side, right? Like, you know, he was solid. And the only thing I wish that we got more of, because in the third fall it was pretty awesome, was seeing Choshu and Hamaguchi stand off against each other. It felt like they'd have a really good match in them, because, man, when they were laying in those lariats, or Hamaguchi was throwing those running elbow drops, man, I was digging their entire time in the ring together, because it felt like Hamaguchi could still go. It felt like Choshu still had some gas left in the tank.
And Choshu, 1990 Choshu, that's, you know, he's still in the later end of his prime, right?
Sure.
I think that, I mean, the later end, he's like, you know, current LeBron.
Kind of, that's a good.
You know, not just in 1990, he's still, you know, he's still really good, but, you know, not at the heights he was in 87 or something.
Yeah, like. not at the current Kobe level, right?
Yeah. No, he's not current Kobe. I mean, this was a match full of some current Kobes putting in some good work. I mean, Cena was pretty old, and Amos was super old.
Oh, man.
And so, yeah, no, very fun. I think people who, I don't think it's as good as the 80s ones. I think really the 10-man tags, I think, those being elimination matches really helps them. But this is a lot of fun. It's a match, I know it was on a yearbook, a 1990 yearbook, and I think the handful of people who watched the 1990 yearbook liked it, but I had certainly never heard of it before. And I think that probably the large majority of people haven't seen. So I put it on I actually uploaded it on YouTube. So it's on there. We'll put a link in the post on Segunda Kaida if people can watch it. But also, you know, you're going to want this on tape. You're going to probably want this match on DVD to put in your collection if you still have a DVD. So this is a great one. And I think, so one thing before we move on, I would say this Hoshino may be the greatest multi-man, one of the greatest multi-man wrestlers in history.
it's he's out there, man. I mean, because whenever he's in the ring, he's gold.
Whatever, like how Bill Dundee is like the world's greatest on the pole. You know, like wrestler, the best effort on the pole matches or climbing scaffold matches. I think he's got to climb. Feels like Ishida's a guy who like in this kind of match is like just the, or Ray's the best elimination chamber wrestler ever. Like this seems like this is Hoshino's, you know, specialty.
The big multi-man tag match. Yeah.
Big multi-man tags. Like it feels like if Hoshino was the head of like a territory.
Yeah, and
be what he would close out a feud with.
Yeah, and like Phil said, this isn't going to be the best. This wasn't even the best match we saw in this grouping today, but it's well worth your time checking out.
It's hard not to enjoy.
Yeah, what does it go about? 25 minutes?
Yeah, 25.
And the time flies by because there's always action. Like 30, it never slows down.
Video clip's 31, so, you know, with entrances, probably about 25, 26.
Yeah, so, great match. What else do you have in the crates for us today, Phil?
All right, so I think the next crates match is, I think it's Aja Kong, Yukimiko Hata is the next one. But, well, it's the next one we'll talk about.
Well, if we're going chronological, Negro Casas versus Lafayette, I think was 93.
Was it 93? All right, well, we'll do that one.
Okay, let's do that one. Negro Casas versus Lafayette from 1993.
This is a hair versus hair match during a period of EMLL that I think is a little underrepresented as far as people's memories. This is like a period where, I don't know, it was a dark period for EMLL, but like as far as footage goes and attention given to a match, this was sort of a dark period, although this was a pretty big match, obviously, a big hair match between two pretty big stars and two, you know, spectacular wrestlers. Negro Casas is arguably a top 10 wrestler of all time. And LaFleur is a guy who has got his highs are really high. He's a guy that, I think it's some drug problems or some injury problems or some.
No drugs in wrestling. Come on.
Drug and injury problems and had sort of a short prime, but very, very good. And this is one of his sort of maybe one of his at least top two or three matches ever. And just a hell of a match. And really just what an awesome, Negro Casas performance.
Yeah, I actually want to go Caída by Caída for this one, Phil. And then, and for those who don't know, a Caída is a fall. Like it's the two out of three falls. It's a what is it? I don't know. Segunda Caída is the second fall. That's the name of your blog.
Caída, Tercera Caída.
Yeah, there you go. I know.
Tercera Caída.
Bix got mad at me because. I was counting down like uno, dos, tres, and he was like, no, it's segunda and tercera. And I was like, no, I don't know Spanish. Shut up. Got a little hurt. But anyway, so the first fall, the first caída, there's a spot where they're brawling on the outside. And the first thing that happens is they go flying through the first two rows of chairs, right? Yeah. Okay. And so there is a point where Casas is striking Lafayette, and Lafayette selling in this was really great because as he's getting kicked by Casas and getting punched in the face, his leg just buckles. And you thought, oh my God, this first ball is going to last, you know, 2 minutes because this guy's not going to be able to stand. But then once he regroups, Lafayette starts laying in these sick kicks. We're talking UWFI, maybe even if you want to go rings. We're talking shoot style level kicking in this match, right, Phil?
Yeah, they're really laying it in. And people will say that Lucha, you know, oh, Lucha's too loose. I think that's one of your dumb criticisms of Lucha. Go watch this. I don't think it was as stiff as the match we're going to talk about next. But this was, they were kicking each other's ass in this thing.
No, I don't know, man. I mean, yeah, the next one was pretty stiff too, but this one, I mean, there's a spot, later on after, you know, remember that early on, they both went flying through the second row. Well, there's a spot where Lafayette picks up Negro Casas and tosses him into the third row.
Yeah, that's crazy. That was
a crazy spot. You know? And after that, you know, Lafayette wins the first fall with the Dragon Suplex. And to add injury to insult, my man Negro Casas is busted open. So now we've already had some of the most highest level brawling you'll see. I mean, getting tossed into the third row. This wasn't Steve Austin, Undertaker, let's hold each other's hair while we walk around aimlessly through the crowd. This was using the crowd and the chairs as weapons of destruction type stuff.
It was like Ray going into the side of the truck.
Right.
Nitro, except it was like a longer throw.
Yep.
It was not a flat surface that you could land on cleanly.
Not at all.
You're going to go like maybe into the side of a wooden chair, maybe into the armrest, you know, maybe into a Mexican dude eating some popcorn with hot sauce on it who didn't move out of the way fast enough. Like, just, you better go. You're going, and you're going and wherever you go. And Casas is like a guy who isn't really like a lucha bleeder the same way, you know, Parada Morgan or
right.
Dandy or, you know, these guys who would be sort of famous, you know, bleeders. Casas is a guy I can't really remember. I mean, I know
he's had plenty of matches.
Bleeds a lot. He's not, and he bleeds a lot in this. And really, you know, and of course, Bloody Lucha's the best.
Didn't he get really bloody in like the El Santo, El Dandy, like triangle feud?
Oh, El Dandy got really bloody on that. But
I thought Casas was bloody in that too. Maybe it was just El Dandy's blood smeared all over Casas. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Casas had some blood on him. Santo had some blood on him. The ring announcers had some blood on him. The first four rows had blood on them.
So anyway, so that's the first fall, right? And so we're talking, like I said, great brawling, some of the stiffest strikes you're going to see, and blood. So already, yeah, it's like
with German suplex to win that fall too, and German suplex, and that's again something that isn't super common in lucha, certainly of that era. Now you got guys just copying ROH tapes and throwing out everything, but this is not something you saw a lot in the 90s.
Right. And so then the second fall, this is what I love, because I mentioned that Negro Casas is busted open, right? Segunda Caída. So what's the first thing Fiera does?
Blogspot.com. You can find reviews of this match and other matches there. Check it out. Something new every day. Segunda Caída.
Segunda Caída. All right. So the first thing Fiera does in the second fall is run full force and kicks Negro Casas in his bloody face.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sold. And then Negro Casas goes outside to regroup. And so what does Lafayette does? He runs full force, kind of looks like he's going for a tope, but no, he just wants to kick Casas in the face again as Casas on the outside. Man, I'm sold. I'm just like, I thought, in wrestling, we usually call this like the King of the Mountain segment, right? Where a guy can't get back in the ring because the other guy keeps kicking him out. This was like the world's best version of that.
Yeah.
This is just nuts. And then when Casas finally gets back into the ring, Lafayette decides to do like a jumping double knee lift to Casas' face. This is just, amazing. And this, when Casas finally gets tired of getting the shit kicked out of him, he decides to go all shoot kickboxer, and then that's when we really ramp up those UWFI shoot style kicks. And he doesn't let up. He does not let up at all. In fact, he just really kicks Fiera to the ground and then hooks a sharpshooter in for the second fall. I didn't really like the finish of the second fall, the sharpshooter, but after Casas was just kicking this dude in the face for like 4 minutes, it kind of made sense that he would just crumple, So far, just like an amazing match. And then we get to the third fall. And I love this third fall for a couple of reasons, Phil. First, it starts, and I think you know the spot I'm talking about. Casas hitting the dropkick in the corner.
Oh, that dropkick was awesome.
And the way Fiera sold it,
made it
look much sicker than it actually was. Like,
that was one of the best dropkicks. Especially a big match like this. Like, you're talking about just a great dropkick in wrestling history. I mean, just looked awesome, sold awesome. I mean, just, for a spot that you've seen thousands and thousands of times as a throwaway thing. I mean, I can't remember a dropkick having that kind of impact
right.
in like big match. This isn't a hair match, Arena Mexico. This is a big deal.
Well, it has a big impact for two reasons. One, because it was nasty as fuck, right?
Yeah.
It was really nasty. But two, because Casas tries it again and misses, and then he sells the leg for the rest of the match because his leg gets hit on the thing. And so there's a point, later on in the match where Casas goes up for a big splash, but he almost falls off the apron because he's selling his leg. And then by the time he finally gets to the top, he misses the big splash because, he had to regroup from selling the leg. So really loved that whole spot. And this third fall, there's so many cool things about it. Talk about Lafayette just punching Negro Casas in the face. Like anytime Negro Casas would get the upper hand, Fiera would just go attack that bloody face of Negro Casas and get right back. Oh,
there's a great spot where they're both on he's just punching each other in the head. But they're just like exchanging, on their knees, just going after each other, like just a classic wrestling moment, right? The two guys can't stand, but they can still punch each other. Plus the part where Negro Casas just starts fish hooking him. Submission, just trying to rip his cheek off the thing.
Well, what I loved about it is because after Fiera had gotten a two fall, a near count, he's lying on his stomach. Okay, he was the one who had just pinned Casas. He's lying on his stomach. Casas sees him lying on his stomach, and I've never seen this in Mexico before. He hooks him into a fucking STF. Have you ever seen that before?
Yeah, it was so cool.
And I like that, you know, it ends with Fiera going up for his flying splash. He misses, and that allows Casas to finally hit that flying splash. And the one thing that bums me out about a lot of Lucha TV is we've seen so many great hair versus hair matches, and you never know if you're going to get the really great head shaving where they just like spend 5 minutes on the head shaving, or if they're going to only show clips of a guy getting his head shaved and quickly move on, right? And this was the latter. This was not a classic guy crying or guy pissed off head shaving. It's just, oh, there's a guy with a razor, and okay, now we're going to quit. So,
yeah, that was a little bit of a bummer. I would say that this, though, I mean, for again, a crates match, I hadn't seen it until a couple, maybe a month or so ago, until I got it uploaded on YouTube. It really is like a classic match of the 1990s. I mean, really, one of the best Lucha Quest matches I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wouldn't disagree with you, man. This is just a great performance. Easy match of the year contender for 1993.
Yeah, pretty good year, 1993.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
It's not a bad year. There's some pretty good matches in 1993, but I mean, you know, this wasn't on the 93 yearbook, right? You guys had, for whatever reason, hadn't come across it, or
I don't think so, man. I mean, I think I'd have to look at the match listing. I'm not gonna say it was or wasn't.
Yeah, looking at the promo, it was in supplemental viewing, so I guess that would mean that it didn't make.
It did not make the yearbook. Yeah, that's fair enough. So.
Yeah.
Just something that we looked over, you know, and it happens.
There's always going to be. That's one cool thing about sort of the age of wrestling that we live in now is that, you know, so many things that even people who are obsessive lunatics like you and Loss finding footage, there's always going to be something that, you know, can still surprise you.
Always slipping through the cracks, man.
Yeah, just this week, like I said, a couple days ago, Matt D found a guy from Japan who's uploading all this All Japan footage of the late 70s and early 80s, all stuff which I don't think had been, you know, almost all of it previously unavailable, didn't make any stats, didn't, you know, not even stuff the Engineetti had. It's like, oh, did you know you wanted to see Terry Funk, Jerry Blackwell? I don't think you knew you wanted to see that, but that's something you really want to see now. It's really, really great. You know, a lot of stuff like that where it's like you had never really thought about that as a dream match. But here it is. It happened. It's awesome. Nobody knew about it, and here it goes. Just like the great thing about Houston, the NWA Classic, same thing, right? You didn't ever really know you wanted to see Andre the Giant versus Harley Race, but you really want to see Andre the Giant versus Harley Race. It's really awesome. So.
I agree. And I want to give a shout-out to my buddy Pete, who actually interviewed Bruce Tharp and has really been rallying people to get that NWA Classics 24/7.
Yeah, everybody should get that. It's great. It's well worth the... I've been doing on Segunda Caída, I've been doing sort of intermittently reviews of that stuff where I sort of assign it a price tag. Like, would I pay $1.25 for this match just if it gets to the $9? I've been well over the $9 for the 2 months that I've done it. Like, grading it that way.
Nice.
That's, as a purchase. And it's like, yep, I would pay $3 to see Jose Lothario, handsome half-breed Gino Hernandez in a Texas Death Cage match.
And yeah, well, we'll have to save that for another edition of Digging Through the Crates, man. So what's going on now, Phil?
All right, so we're gonna take a commercial break. Our friends at the Place to Be Nation have agreed to host this, so I don't have to worry about trying to get a website and a server and all those things that I don't know how to do because I'm old. So they all got a lot of other great shows. Almost all of them have my friend Will on them. So we're gonna get a commercial.
or our buddy Chris Zellner. He's the new podcast tour.
He's the new podcast tour. One of those two guys. Chris will be on this one. I haven't asked him, but you know, it doesn't seem like you have to ask him. He shows up, so he'll be on a future episode of Digging Into the Crates for sure. So we're gonna take a break for a commercial, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope. Plays Ruby Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaysToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Senior, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman Podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaysToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
The Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only are proud to present the PWO-PTBN Podcast Network. Join us for a variety of great shows that explore all the facets of professional wrestling.
Join good old Will from Texas for our Place to Be Nation reaction shows and Goodwill Wrestling, which has been kicking since before JR had barbecue sauce.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play and join Chad and Parv as they discuss classic NWA and WCW pay-per-view.
And take in one of our newest podcasts, Exile on Bed Street, and allow Chris Zellner to give you a history lesson about important moments in wrestling's colorful past.
Listen to Johnny, Pete, Parv, and Kelly, the titans of wrestling, as they examine in depth the history of the WWF in the 1970s and 1980s.
And then there's Brainbuster, the wrestling game show, Tag Teams Back Again, the Pro Wrestling Super Show, the All Japan Excite Series, and the Super Extreme Vault for some ECW.
You can hear all of these great podcasts and more on one feed. Remember, PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network, part of the Place to Be Nation family.
Welcome back, everyone, to Digging in the Crates. I'm your host, Phil Schneider, here with Will. We're talking about the first four matches on the new Schneider Comp. This will be Schneider Comp, what, 25? Will? 26?
No, 27.
27. You know, haven't released any in a couple years. And, of course, the lion's share of them were from the 90s and early 2000s. So this is, but we came up with a fun idea to do them again, where I'm kind of looking through all the wrestling world. I'm digging in the crates like a DJ trying to find an old soul beat to make an 80s hip hop record. I'm the DJ premier of professional wrestling. This one, it may be stretching a little bit with the idea of the digging in the crates concept, because this is a pretty well-known match, although certainly I don't think it's one of the most well-known Joshi matches of the 90s. It's not in the top tier, but it might be in the second tier. And that's Yukimiko Hata versus Aja Kong from January 24th, 1994. Well, Gio, what do you think of this? I know you're not the biggest Joshi fan.
I'm not. Here's the thing, Phil, is that when I first got into internet wrestling and buying tapes and whatnot, I bought a lot of Joshi based off people's recommendations, based off like your recommendations from those old Schneider comps, you know? And I think the problem I have with most Joshi wrestling is that there's a certain go-go-go style to most of it, right? Hitting the big spot. And you start getting numb to that. Then you add the screaming and the yelling, and it just wore on me after a while to where I didn't want to see it. And so now if someone tells me, hey, you want to check this out because they work it in a shoot style fashion, okay, cool, I'm with that. Or they work it in a completely different way than most Joshi matches, then I'm on board. But your general typical Joshi classics, your Manami Toyota matches, Akira Hokuto. I don't even know if I said that right. I don't care. I'm not from Japan. I pass. Give him someone else.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat. I mean, I've watched a ton of it. I started watching it around when this match happened. Like I would get tapes from Japanese video store in the 90s is how I got into Japanese wrestling. Outside of the stuff, you know, every once in a while Liger would show up in WCW or something like that. I would really dig it. But that's how I first started kind of watching Japanese wrestling, as I go to a Japanese video store in California where I'm from, and they had some All Japan Women, and that, of course, early days of the internet had a lot of sort of press, and some of the stuff, I mean, Aja Kong, somebody I always like. Ada too. These are two of my Joshi wrestlers. I would say these two and Miko Satomura would be three of my favorites.
I wouldn't argue with that.
And and one of the reasons is like this match is these are a couple of girls who will beat the holy shit piss out of each other. And this is as violent as your like Ikeda Ishikawa like Futen matches. Almost. I mean, there are points in this that are like just uncomfortable to watch with the level of beating that these two are laying on each other.
The violence.
Oh my God. And these are the two, right? These are, if you had to pick two Joshi wrestlers that are going to kick your ass, it's Aja Kong and Yumiko Ada. And this is the match where they probably go the farthest in that.
Yeah. I think there's really two parts to this match, right? The first part was really kind of like that UWFI-ish shoot style. I mean, man, that back fist by Aja Kong early on is one of the sickest things ever, and it just lands hot on her ass.
Yeah, you know, I don't think this is UWFI as much as this is Battle Arts, right? I mean, because
sure,
it's
Battle Arts.
The UWFI, you know, those guys were gonna, you know, those they're not hitting each other this hard. God has never hit anybody this hard. You know, this is Alexander Otsuka, this is that kind of stuff. We're just like, all right, this is, you know, all the other punches you've ever seen in wrestling, well, this is that without any of the pulling.
Yeah, there was a point early on where they were on the mat, and, you know, you watch UFC, as do I. There was a point where Aja Kong was covering Hada's throat, and it reminded me of Brock Lesnar pinning Frank Mir on the UFC mat. Do you remember that? And if you looked at his fist, just kind of like covered the entirety of Mir's throat, and he couldn't move because that huge fist was just keeping him in place, and it was just such a great visual. But so the first act is, like you said, it's that battle art style. Whereas the second act, and you're going to describe this, I know you are, is all about the bloody hand.
Oh, yes. The stigmata. I guess I'm not exactly sure how hot a bust her hand. I mean, maybe on the pile driver on the table, like a wood splinter. Did you catch where she her head?
No, I thought at first Aja Kong's ear was bleeding. Like, I thought, like, she was just hitting her so much, like, inside the head with those stiff forearms. I mean, we're not talking RVD forearms here. We're talking real stiff forearms. We're not talking random indie fake transition forearms. We're talking forearms that are going to make you lose your eardrum forearms. So I actually thought it was Aja Kong's ear was bleeding, and then whenever Ada would hit her with a strike, I thought, oh, okay, she's got Aja's blood, but it was the other way around, man. Yeah. I have no idea.
Ada gets a deep gash in the palm of her hand, is what we're talking about. I mean, just like a huge chunk of skin missing and just blood pouring out of her palm. Like a Franciscan nun in the 14th century, who's got the mark of Jesus on her hand. I mean, it is gross. And Aja, you know, like a true professional wrestler, sees that and starts punching and jabbing and pulling and scraping at that cut. And it's just, you know, it's just the kind of thing where I don't ever remember seeing anybody work a hand wound before in a wrestling match. But Aja, you know, Aja goes, oh, I got 11 different spots I can work around a hand wound. I go into my hand wound spot.
Well, you know what's crazy about that is that we have seen people work the hand. Like, Dick Murdoch is a master at, like, working a hand. Or we've seen, like, Regal work over Chris Hero's hand in NXT, yeah, right? Sure. But not a bloody hand where, you know, the person could, like, legally die because they lost too much blood. You know, they basically stopped the match so they could tape the hand up, right? And that didn't last long.
Gets on the mic and starts talking shit. Like, oh, you're going to get somebody's got to tape your hand up? And then Otis just rips the tape off her hand. Badass.
Yes, that was great.
Like, I don't speak Japanese, but Aja clearly called her some names and said, you know, you need somebody to come here and fix your little boo-boo. You need to get a Band-Aid. You need mommy to kiss it. And then Otto rips the bandage off her hand and starts just going at her. And, you know, Otto was getting in this match, too. It's not like this was one-sided. I mean, she was field goal kicking Aja Kong's head.
Yep.
Like, you know, just winding up as hard as she can and trying to split her head like a pumpkin.
No, you're right. I think there are a couple of things I didn't like about this match. And, you know, maybe it's just because of the time we lived in. Maybe at the time it was groundbreaking. I didn't like the early pile driver spot because then she puts her in the ring for two more pile drivers. When that happens in Georgia in 1980, it sends Ted DiBiase to the hospital. Yeah. Happens in 1994, All Japan's women, and then they just get up and start fighting again. So that kind of bothered me, you know. But the match got so great after that I could forgive it. And then
see, well, after the third pile driver, why the fuck did Phil send me this match?
Yeah, I was
remember this match, right? I'm sure you've seen this before. Have you seen this match before or not?
I vaguely remember the hand stuff, but man, I mean, dude, I'm like you. I watch so much wrestling, and I do not have photographic memory, so I don't remember a lot of the shit I watch. I have to take notes, Phil.
So you were watching it and going, man, what is Phil doing sending me this match? I mean, they're kicking each other and everything, but come on.
Right. And
but
so
I specifically sent you this match because my man Will is a guy who loves working over a body part.
And I'm a vampire. Body part. I love working on the body part, and I'm a vampire. Give me blood all day, every day. Yeah. Right. And so, you, like I said, I mean, Phil gave me two matches with blood in them, and I was more than happy. But, and you're right, because we just did a Triple Mania reaction show for one of the worst shows of all time. And in that show, Alberto Del Rio gets busted open. Okay. And my argument on the show, and Chris and Bix, they kind of dismissed it as, well, you just don't watch enough Lucha or whatever. It's like, you just got to accept it for what it is. We're like, I was like, wait a minute. We just watched Negro Casas and La Fiera, where every time La Fiera needed to get control of the match, he was punching fucking Negro Casas or kicking him in the face. You know what I mean? Or throwing elbows to the cut. We see this match in Japan, and they start attacking the cut on the hand of all things.
Yeah.
Don't tell me that, you know, that couldn't have happened in this AAA match. To me, it's just common sense. It's logic. And it'll always make a match better because it makes it a lot of
fun. But he's not Negro Casas.
No, but my point is,
Brian Cage sure as shit is not La Fiera.
That's not the point. Hold on. My point is there's a way to wrestle smart. You know what I mean? And to me, it's just common. You don't have to be a great wrestler to see blood and start attacking the blood. You know what I mean? It's just, I mean, you don't have to be. And that's kind of my argument. That's what makes the difference between smart wrestling and then just getting in a ring and trading spots or bleeding for the sake of blood. Like, there's good blood and bad blood, right, in wrestling. Good bleeding is when the opponent is able to capitalize on it. Bad bleeding is you want to bleed just to show that you're a man. Or bullshit, some bullshit. So this one, the only thing I didn't like was were the pile drivers. And the ending was kind of, instead of like a really hand-focused, it was kind of more of your back and forth, let us hit our big moves, to put this match away. And I like those type of finishes. I just wish it would have incorporated the hand more. But besides this, man, this was hot Joshi action. And you won't hear me say that a lot.
Yeah. Or I would have liked to finish where if instead of them hitting, like, you know, power bombs and stuff like that, you know, have a finish where somebody just knocks somebody out.
That would have been better too.
Yeah. You know, because that was what a lot of this match was, really. It was like these two trying to see who the baddest bitch on the block is, right? Who's the one who can hit you the hardest and take the hardest shot. And not in a stand there and forearm each other and stare dumb-eyed at each other's face while you throw forearms for 10 minutes, like in current New Japan. I mean, this was all like, you know, this wasn't just two people standing there throwing shots for the sake of it, like a Sakamoto match or something like that.
No, it felt like it could end after 5 minutes with someone legitimately being knocked out.
Yeah.
And I never get that feeling with those New Japan elbow spots, you know, where they just trade forearms. I
go, ooh, and stare at each other.
I never get that feeling that this match is going to end in 4 minutes from those spots.
I'm watching these two matches, we're just thinking, man, remember when Japanese wrestling was good?
I like some of the new Japanese stuff, but it's not to the quality of like this stuff. And like I said, I'm not even a big Joshi fan, but, you know, I like me some Aja Kong too, man. But I want me some more Aja Kong versus Hada. I don't want more Aja Kong versus Kyoko Inoue or Monami Toyota.
That stuff's kind of fun. I mean, yeah, maybe I don't know.
I'm just over it. I'm old, man. I'm over it.
I mean, Aja versus those girls is kind of fun just because, you know, it's them trying to work all their high spots in while she's beating the shit out of them. You know, it's a little like a Vader versus, you know, Sting kind of match.
Yeah.
I certainly don't want to see Kyoko Inoue versus Manami Toyota, but I wouldn't mind. And I haven't watched those matches in a long, long, long time. But I remember in the 90s liking the only time I really liked your high spot.
I think I just have to get over my own misogyny, you know, my own biases. It's clearly just because I'm a male chauvinist pig, right? Okay. As long as you accept that, I'll accept that. No problem. All right. So what's next, Phil? What's our last match of the evening?
We're going to 2015. We were in the 90s for the first three matches, and, you know, now we're going to current wrestling, and it's Chris Dickinson versus Low Ki. This is it's not the first on our Segunda Caída list of for 2015, because I don't think Eric didn't like this as much as I liked it, but it's probably my favorite, certainly my favorite indie match of the year, and one of my favorite, two or three favorite matches of the year so far, from JPW.
Fair enough.
Bacon, from March 21st, 2015, Low Ki versus Chris Dickinson. And JPW was an indie promotion that's been around for a long, long time. It predated ROH, actually.
And you've always been a big champion of JPW.
Yeah, and it's a promotion that was around before ROH and sort of was the home promotion for a lot of those guys before they actually became bigger stars there. Like, that was where Low Ki was from. That was where Homicide was from. Red sort of started out there in a lot of ways. All your sort of New Jersey Puerto Ricans all came from JPW, and went on to do other things, and, you know, of note, and were big parts of, you know, the sort of indie revolution in the 2000s, were on the backs of a lot of JPW guys. Hit Squad, all of Special K were JPW trainees. But in some ways, I liked those guys in JPW more than I liked them in ROH. Something about the sort of grittiness of that fed. And then they've been, you know, they're a little like IWA Mid-South.
What do you mean? How?
Because the model, in the sense they'll go away for a while, JPW will go away for a while, and then they'll run some more shows, then, you know, the thing will happen for a year and a half, and then they'll run a show. And so they're sort of sporadic. Like, I think this is their only show of 2015, and they have another one scheduled for, like, near the end of the year. But they're not a running fed anymore.
I got you. Okay.
The angle at the end of this match hasn't paid off anywhere.
Okay.
But so this, the main event of this match, I'm assuming the first time you've ever seen Chris Dickinson, Will?
It is, man. I thought, man, this guy has a really solid build. He has great facial expressions. Like he seems to really understand wrestling. But then I was like, well, why hasn't he gotten a shot? And then I looked, and he's only about an inch taller than Loki. So I was like, oh, okay, that's why. That's why I've never seen him before.
And he's a guy who I legitimately did not like. This, I think, is by far the best match he's ever been. He's a guy that during the first parts of his career when I saw him, I really, really did not like him. I think there are definitely some reviews of like Beyond shows and stuff from a couple years ago where I described Chris Dickinson as a fake Davey Richards, which is about as damning a statement as you can make about somebody.
Dude, when you're a fake Davey Richards, that's pretty horrible. And just full disclosure, hold on. Full disclosure for people who don't know, Phil and I are not fans of Davey Richards. I despise the way he wrestles. I despise the way he tries to be a warrior or, you know, one of those Benoit Dynamite Kid clones, you know, who's a little guy who tries to be bigger than he is. Like with Dynamite Kid, dude, I don't care what you think about Dynamite Kid. I believed it because he did seem like a legitimate prick in real life, right? And he did seem like a bully. So I kind of believed it, that he would go in and abuse people, even though he was like 5'4". I don't buy it with Davey Richards. Sorry, I had to get that out there, Phil.
That's a lot like a guy who was like a guy who was grew up watching Davey Richards tapes the way Davey Richards grew up watching Benoit grew up watching Dynamite Kid. Initially, it was like a guy who was like, oh, man, this is the most faded, you know, like how back when we used to trade tapes, where the tapes would get worse and worse after every generation of the video quality. It was like the 8th-gen video quality version of those guys when I first saw them. I was like, oh, I never want to watch another Chris Dickinson match again.
Right. Well, I'm glad you told me about this match, because this one, there's a couple of things that just indie promotions do. Like, they had a slap battle, like a chop battle. And unless it involves Wahoo McDaniel, I don't want to see a chop battle in 2015. You know, yeah. I'm over it.
Oh, low-key, he'll chop a guy, though. I had no problem. I mean, he's one of those guys. Like,
but to me, it's played,
not Wahoo McDaniel, but low-key is the guy who will lace a guy with a chop.
But Phil, the highlight spot of this match, especially your line, and you know what I'm talking about, is that super sick low-key combo with jabs and uppercuts. I mean, dude, this is, remember we talked about, like, low-key and Red doing, like, Matrix kicks and, like, stomps and flipping out of stuff, and it was, like, really groundbreaking for the time. This was, like, super fast. Like, they had to replay it in slow motion for you to see all of the strikes as they hit, because he did it so fast, and it sent Dickinson into the ropes. And that was a spot where I legitimately thought, okay, because we've seen Loki knock dudes out before in the middle of a ring, quote-unquote, unintentionally.
Right.
This felt like a spot where he could have knocked Dickinson out unintentionally.
So yeah. I want to talk a little more about Dickinson before we get back to this, because I want to talk about sort of how he's evolved into a guy that I like from being a guy I hated. And I think he cut out almost all of the extraneous bullshit from his wrestling. And now he just kind of gets over by being just the most despicable scumbag like you've ever, like, he's such, like, he is one of the most naturally hateable wrestlers. Like, he comes across, like, you ever hear those stories where, like, a football team will molest a mentally retarded girl? And you think, oh my God, what's going on in this
Christ
world where this would happen? But he looks like the kind of guy who would ringleader that. You know, like, come up with the plan, convince the bullied members of his football team who didn't want to go along with it. He'd be the ringleader of that. He's like, he felt like Tully in Kids. Like, just like an absolute, like, scumbag sociopath. And
I never got that vibe, but okay.
He runs with, like, crew of, like, you know, in the crew, his gang of dudes are just, like, the worst, like, guys. Like, they feel like the kind of people who would, you know,
They would YouTube them throwing puppies off a bridge.
Or dropping roofies in people's drinks at nightclubs. Yeah.
Yeah, that's too nice of a thing for him. You know, like he felt like a kind of guy who wouldn't want an unconscious girl if he was going to rape her. He wanted to be present in the experience. He's got this kind of run. He's had a run in this year where there's sort of a video clip of him kind of went viral of him like power bombing a woman like neck first into the ring post as part of a feud and beyond where he became like this guy who can get legitimate like screw you heat in indie wrestling still, which is something that's very, very, very hard to do. And it felt it here. Like he felt like he comes in at the beginning of the show and interrupts a 10 bell salute for Perro Aguayo Jr. So, like, you know, and low key is fury, you know, because low key's whole shtick is that, you know, the honor of professional wrestling, right? So immediately low key comes into this match wanting to kick this dude's ass. And it had that feel during the parts of it, like you talked about with this slow motion punch combination. There were parts of this match that felt like, you know, we're going to go off the rails a little bit, had a Carisu in New Japan feel to it. Which, yeah. Again, you know, most indie wrestling really feels like a couple of guys who, you know, got together backstage and said, all right, we got to put on a 5-star match for the fans.
This felt like
inter-promotional Japanese match, where like there were parts of this where these guys were, you know, kick. Dickinson would kick Loki in a part of his back you're not supposed to kick him in, and the Loki would get up and, you know, shoot punch him in the mouth. And Loki's a guy with he's a guy who's for doing this for years and has been really in the wilderness for, I don't know, the last 3 or 4 years. You don't see Loki show up that much. He was in a TNA for a while, which might as well be out of wrestling. And you know, isn't a guy who's part of Evolve or ROH or PWG or in these places where people have indie matches that people talk about. So it was so cool to watch him this and it kind of reminds me of the days where he was the guy. Him and Danielson were the two guys that would be the top guys in indie wrestling. Would be the guys who would want to watch every one of their matches.
Right, and this one had a ton of great spots. Speaking about Dickinson being a great heel early on, they both go out of the ring, and the announcers tried playing it up like, did he hit him with a low blow? Did he or did he not? And then, like, a couple of minutes later, when the ref isn't looking, he does, like, the trick knee low blow where, you know, clearly low blows Loki, and you're like, oh, wow, yeah, he clearly meant to give him a low blow earlier, you know. And those are the little things that, like, that Davey Richards would never do. Like, Davey Richards wouldn't do that shit. Like, because, you know, he's heel or face. He's too proud of a warrior to, you know, stoop to that level. No, I like my heels dirty, who do tricks, who pull hair, who execute low blows, you know, and this guy had that in spades.
Yeah. And there was plenty of cool indie wrestling spots, too. I mean, that Dickinson Superplex, where he, like, threw Loki, like, 3/4 of the way across the ring. Yeah, I mean, that was an awesome superplex.
Well, not only do I like that superplex, Phil, but it also played into the ending because then he tried to go to the well one too many times. Loki caught him. You know, the Tree of Woe spot took a little bit long to set up, but he set him up for the Tree of Woe double stomp, and it played off that superplex. If he doesn't hit that superplex, then the ending doesn't come across as cool as it did.
Yeah, and I liked. How key, that's a hard spot to set up. That double stomp is a hard way to not look bad. Like that spot that often looks really bad, like a guy is really cooperating. Why is he in that position? Why do people keep popping Billy Kidman? Right? Sometimes it feels a little like that, but I liked how Key had to like grind his heel into Dickinson's knee to get him to pop up.
Yes. So
it was like a cool little moment that was like, oh, okay, this is a spot that often looks stupid. And that Key and Dickinson made look cool. I also really love that like arm trap submission thing where he was bending him in a really awkward way.
Yes.
Where like Loki was in the world's most painful looking yoga pose.
The cool spot was that pendulum, you know, like where he hooks him into that pendulum, swings him into the bottom a turnbuckle, and then when he gets him back, you know, he's still got him in the pendulum, drops him to the mat, and then immediately curb stomps him. You know, just a great sequence. And I haven't seen that swinging pendulum. I think I want to say Conan did it to, like, Super Callow or Hoovy in, like, a 1997 WCW pay-per-view. You know?
Yeah, well, not in that covered of a spot.
Right. And so I just the way that went out. And like you said, Dickinson has some really cool submission holds. And sometimes he would just go to, like, a common headlock or a chin lock, you know, which I don't mind at all as long as they work out of it, you know. But when he wanted to, he could do some really cool higher-level submission stuff, you know. Yeah. So now I'm thinking I want to see Chris Dickinson and see how he works against a guy like Thatch or Gulak or, you know, one of these other guys that we really hype up of the current indie crop.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. He had a three-match over the course of a weekend, a three-match series with Samoa Joe in three different promotions. And I've seen one of them that I thought was pretty good, but a not great. And I'm interested in trying to catch the other two. Like, he worked Samoa Joe like on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
When was Samoa Joe's last really great match, though? I don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen Samoa Joe since he went to TNA.
Yeah. I don't know. It's been a while.
And I didn't say when he left TNA. I mean, since he went to TNA.
I liked some of the indie stuff he did in between his TNA and WWE. I thought he looked pretty good in them. I don't know if any of them were great. He is in a fun three-way in AAW with some dude in a wrestling ear protector thing in Eddie Kingston. He was good at.
Okay.
But, you know.
Well.
That was. So I don't know what would be the next thing. But it was the one Dickinson match was pretty fun. So there's some Dickinson stuff. And there's a really fun Dickinson-Nick Gage brawl from Beyond, where the idea is that the girl who Dickinson almost killed, you know, that she's calling in Philly to take down New Jersey and Chris Dickinson. So she calls up, like, Nick Gage to come try to kill him, and Sandman comes out of a different promoter, different fab, and that's the angle. So the Nick Gage match is really a lot of fun, just because Nick Gage is a guy who's a lot of fun for a completely out-of-control lunatic who got out of prison 6 months ago. And
Well, maybe you'll have to review a Nick Gage match for your next Digging in the Crates, Phil.
Yeah, I don't know if Nick Gage is making a shake-up. I enjoy him, though. Me and Dylan are like the leading lights on the Nick Gage 2015 Nick Gage out of jail, ready to kill somebody tour.
Well, so let's look back at all four of these matches. Which one is your favorite, Phil?
Oh, I think Negro Casas left here.
No doubt, right? Like that's like the match of the decade.
That's real. Yeah. That's amazing. Then probably, I mean, it might be low-key Chris Dickinson.
I think I would go with that Joshi match, and people know me know that's high praise. I think I would go Casas Vieira, the Joshi match, then low-key Dickinson, then the 10-man.
Okay, cool. I'm one of the things that I'm that low-key Chris Dickinson match, I don't know if that's a match very many people have seen. I mean, the people in the crowd saw it. I've seen it. I made Eric watch it. I think Dylan watched it. But outside of that, I don't think that's something that people have seen. So hopefully that'll be something people will get the Schneider Cup to check out, because you have to go pretty into the dark recesses of the internet to find that online. That's not going to be linked on YouTube.
No, I agree with that.
So, but yeah, so this has been fun. Well, I appreciate you going, appearing on my first show. And, so we're going to try to do these, you know, semi-regularly, and then and going to put together a pretty cool DVD for people to pick up after the whole thing is over.
Yeah, at some point in time, sure.
I'm going to put link. There'll be a link up to this on Place to Be Nation as well as on Segunda Caída, where on the Segunda Caída link, I'll put up the three matches that are on YouTube so people can check those out, watch them either before they listen to this or after they listen to it. Do you have anything you want to plug, Will?
Well, I'll tell you what, man. People are going to get really tired of my voice by the end of the week. I got an entire SummerSlam series on Place to Be Nation under the Goodwill Wrestling banner where I'm going to do a podcast every day leading to SummerSlam, all SummerSlam themed. You're going to have a tons of guests from the Place to Be Nation on there, and stay tuned for that. And then I'll probably go into the basement and hide out for, you know, a couple of months, only popping up for reaction shows.
Okay, and I'm going to be doing this, and then you can catch, read every day, sagunakaita.blogspot.com. We've got, put up a post every day for almost 2 years, so we're really, we've really become an actual place you can count on reading something on the internet on a regular basis, which is not what I would have expected when we started, me and Tom started this. And yeah. We do a post every 3 weeks, and then we do 4 posts, then we would disappear for a month.
Yeah,
so check out sagunakaita.blogspot.com. Check out aspen.us for the 5 best ideas of the day. If you're interested in something unwrestling related, want to find out what's going on in the world around you, you can head out, and we'll be back soon.
And you don't stop, I keep on. 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 Yo, praise the Lord for showbiz. My partner with the beats, with the Nikes on his feet. Buying old records is a habit. I get more run than a Volkswagen Rabbit. You know I gotta have it. I got more props than the cop called McGarrett, who played on Hawaii Vivo and I formed a production company with Show. And J Studio is the lab. But the session is closed, cause I know you got a big nose. Try to sniff out the name. You lack originality, and that's a damn shame. Don't front, I know I got you open like a pack of tokens. Yo, I put your coat in. I'm not the one to be ganged on. I didn't know it was your girl we ran the train on. But no hard feelings, your girl was appealing. Did my share of dealing, sexual healing. You didn't know she was a groupie, but I'ma put you up on the scoopy. Used to live in Forest, my daughter lives on Morris. Used to play softball with my man Horace. I kick flavor like my man Sonny Chiba. Aries is my sign, I'm compatible with Libra. I like the program beats. Diamond D is out, I wanna say pay. Showbiz, there's deals to make. So let's get busy and dig in the crates.
Oh, you don't stop, you keep on.
Digging in the crates. Let's get busy.
Keep on.
Digging in the crates.
Yo, thank the law for Diamond D. No afro instead, he keeps dreads in his head. My partner from the past, from 163rd back when I was a hoodlum, beating on nerds. It started
way back when?
About 12 years ago, I was 9, he was 10. Before smoking weed and hanging out and playing hooky, we used to break dance in the jams, electric boogie. Girls watch jockin', my nickname is Rockin'. The crowd, I was shocking. Freaks, I was clocking. Step up and see showbiz performing. My beats hit hard,
like Big George Foreman.
So MCs and DJs who thought they were nice and get upset like Buster did to Tyson. That wasn't the plan, and he's still my man since he beat up Miss Green outside Dapper Dan. Wait a minute, that's a different subject. Talk about the Moet and the Pipers, that's in effect. Back to the show. The show B-I-Z down with D-I-T-C-A-G is my MC, relying on a giant. The giant are relying, never crying for the crack, cause I'm not a crack client. Girls stick like crazy glue, they think they're getting dope, but I treat hoes like drugs, I just say no. I lamp in a residence, so keeping dead presidents a fact. I like my pockets fat, not flat. A rapper, not a singer, so hooker don't bring her. Problem to me, so go ahead, you humdinger. Show's about to blow in 91, so I'm straight down with the crew caught digging in the crates. Digging it in the crate.
So get back, get your sticks and get your bats. Get your licks and I'ma still get fat. Try to diss and get the back hand. I'm dressed in black, a black hat for a black man. The giant is better and clever. Go ahead and sleep and you'll rest forever and ever. I'm like a bomb, sometimes I'm calm. No telling what can happen once the mic is in my right palm. Me and showbiz too deep, but don't sleep. Go ahead and retreat or face agony of defeat. AG is in command. You remember the black hat at the bottom of my Timberland. Save it. If you think you pose a threat, just chill and watch how many hoes I get. Now you sweat the props I got.
Kick a rhyme.
A rhyme? Sure, why not? Always get fat to a hype track. So finesse.
What's up?
Psych, give me that mic back. The crowd I'll capture. Microphone master. Finger licking and kicking lyrics from here to Africa. I'm the bold kind. My rhymes are gold mine. Let it all
off, set it off just for old times. Think you're ready for this, you wanna battle. Your music is riddle rattle, your rhymes are scribble scrabble. The giant is greater, so I'm great. Down with the group called Digging in the Crates.
Yeah, yeah, we gonna set it off like this. D-I-T-C. Now when it comes to lyrics, mics are pulverized. It's law finesse, time to go for mine. So stand back, let the men play. I put rhymes in shape just like Ben Gate. I'm great and honorable, suckers, I bomb a few. I run more games than a carnivore, I'ma get mine. As soon as you say start, sweat hoods and funky rhymes is my trademark. I'ma get fame, not from her or his name, cause yo,
what's up?
I'm funkin' in a shit stain. Mics I smoke, rhymes I hurl. My hobby is collecting fly looking girls. Strictly for the ladies, call me Lord Finesse. And I'm all about money and sex. Finesse is the name to say, and I came to play. We could have fun, but put the whips and chains away. Sex and money is what makes me a happy man. And I sport more styles than Jackie Chan. I keep rising, I'm not the type to sink low. Me take a loss on a mic, I don't think so. Lord Finesse is out to make papes. Down with the crew called Digging in the Crates.